I appeared right above the dragon, in midair. And then with a thought, I brought another spiked block out of my inventory. It fell straight down onto the dragon's head. With a crack, the block smashed the dragon's head downward. The force of the impact jammed Ken's sword, still lodged in its neck, in deeper. And then, with one final twitch on the ground, the dragon vanished.
Your party has killed a small green dragon. You have earned 3,981 experience points. You have gained a level.
There was only one room after the dragon's, but it was an important one. A set of stairs led upward to an altar, and upon that altar laid a single glistening golden ring. One of the five pieces of the Pentacrest, the legendary relic that would grant us entrance to the Demon King's palace. I hesitated upon seeing it. Was this really happening? Was I worthy to take this step? What would happen if I failed? And then I thought back to that old man, waiting in the dungeon for a new hero to come. I thought of the people in the villages that had been destroyed by the Demon King's armies. And I thought of the endless cycle of heroes and Demon Kings, the violence that would bring ruin to the world time and time again. Never again. I may not be a hero, but I will not wait and watch the world burn. I will not take comfort in the knowledge that the goddesses will send someone else to save us. It may not be something I was chosen for, but I will make my own path. I will break the cycle. And I will show this world that anyone can save it, if they try. I strode forward, watching the softly glowing circle. It was beautiful, a sacred relic of legend, one I dreamed of 100 times. I whacked it with my sword a couple times. Nothing happened. Ken shot me a withering glance. I gave him a sheepish look in return, rubbing the back of my head. Look, it could have been a mimic, okay?
Just pick up the Pentacrest piece, Yui.
I reached out and picked up the golden ring. It gleamed brightly in my hand, and I felt a sense of warmth and calm wash over me. For once, everything felt right. Let's go, Ken. We have a world to save. Step 7. Wait! You forgot to recruit loyal companions. Do that. Ken healed our wounds after the big fight. Then we made our way back to the boss room. I carefully retrieved the 2 spike blocks that I'd used and stored them in my inventory. They'd already helped us with 1 boss fight. I wasn't going to leave them behind. After that, we did 1 last sweep through the dungeon for loot, but didn't find much. I took a few more magic torches because I could. It took close to 3 days to make it back to town after clearing the dungeon, but that wouldn't be a problem in the future, because during the journey back, I'd chosen to take another level in Bag Mage, and I'd unlocked a new spell, Town Gate. Town Gate would allow me to bind myself to an ancestral monument, a special type of structure infused with great magical power. Upon completing that binding, I would be able to cast Town Gate to open a gateway to that monument. I could then travel through it, and so could my allies. The portal would only last about 1 minute, and I could only be bound to 1 location at a time, but it was still an amazing spell. If I'd had it during the fight with the dragon, perhaps I would have used it to flee. Fleeing might have been possible with Faze, but it would have been much trickier. That thing had been far too powerful for us to defeat without using tricks like the blocks, and it served as a grim reminder of how much deadlier bosses could be compared to ordinary monsters. I wouldn't make the same mistake twice. We'd be better prepared before we went to the next dungeon. After arriving, I immediately touched the gigantic stone monument in the center of the town. It glowed at my touch, indicating that I'd successfully bound my spirit to it. This would allow me to use my new Town Gate spell to return there quickly in the future. I wished I had obtained that spell before going to the dungeon. It would have made the trip back so much faster. I was exhausted, Rather than going straight to bed, however, we decided to take some time at the nearby town inn to celebrate. We grabbed a table by the fire, ordered food and more than a few drinks, and relaxed. We were both too exhausted to chat, but I enjoyed listening to the talks of the other adventurers nearby. They told tales of their own exploits and rumors of things happening around the world.
"Heard the Demon King's army hit another kingdom recently. If we're not lucky, we might be next."
"Up, left, down, left is the way to the secret."
"Did you hear that Princess Fitzgerald disappeared a couple days ago? I wonder if it has anything to do with that dungeon someone cleared." I perked up at that. The princess had disappeared? Had she been captured by the Demon King? Wasn't it a little early for that? Wait, was that our fault? How did anyone even know we'd cleared that dungeon so soon? It had only been a few days. Had someone been watching us? I gave Ken a look, but he didn't seem to be paying attention to the same conversation. He was too busy checking out a cute mage at another table. I rolled my eyes and went back to my soup, pondering. Was this really the right path? Could I justify continuing on my self-made quest, knowing that I might fail and get people hurt in the process? Somehow, the soup seemed colder when I took my next sip. The night passed, and I found no easy answers. In the morning, Ken pulled aside the curtains blocking the window, pouring light into our room. I groaned, pulling the rough sheets of my bed tighter and rolling into a ball.
"Early."
Ken laughed and sat down at the foot of my bed.
"Ah, precisely. Bright and early. Plenty of time to get things done."
Truly, my mastery of articulate speech was my most heroic quality. Ken patted my leg.
"I'll go order breakfast."
I must have fallen back to sleep after that, because the next thing I remember was the smell of food and tea. Cautiously, and with the utmost skepticism, I peered out from beneath the covers. There was a tray of food sitting on a table next to me. I shivered, slowly dislodging myself from the sheets and rubbed my eyes. Ken pulled over another chair. I don't know when or where he got one. There had only been one in the room to start with. And sat down next to me, a plate on his lap. He delicately lifted a cup of tea and took a sip.
"You should drink, at least. It'll help with the hangover."
"Not hungover," I insisted. "Not much, at least." I still took his advice and took a sip of the tea. It was hot and herbal, but I couldn't really enjoy it. There was too much on my mind.
"You seem glum, chum. What's bothering you?"
I frowned, letting out a sigh. I'm not sure I should say anything.
"Come now. We've just had quite a victory together. If we are to be companions, we must share both the good and the bad, yes?"
I supposed he was right. I'm just having reservations.
"Truly, you've always seemed quite steadfast. What bothers you so?"
"Well, I was listening to rumors last night, and I heard that the princess had disappeared."
"Ah, yes. Most likely captured. This adds such legitimacy to our quest."
I blinked. "What?"
"Princess capturing is a grand tradition. If the Demon King has struck so soon, he truly must be acknowledging us. I'd think you'd be thrilled."
"She's a person, Ken. We could be getting her injured or killed." Ken frowned.
"Well, I suppose. But don't you think that she'd be, well, ready for that? I imagine every princess in that family has been trained their entire life to be captured by the Demon King. It's sort of their lot in life, prophecies and all that."
"That doesn't really make it any better. And wouldn't this princess normally be, well, out of season? There shouldn't be a hero for more than 70 years. She probably thought she had an out." I shook my head. "And even if she was prepared, that wouldn't make it much better. Honestly, this whole prophetic cycle is garbage. Can you imagine being born and knowing that at some point,
a demon king was probably going to capture you just to play some role in a traditional story?
Ken raised a hand to his chin, considering.
I suppose you may be right. If it's any consolation, though, the princess usually does get to shoot him in the heart with a golden bow and arrows of light toward the end of things. I imagine that will be quite cathartic for her.
That doesn't really help, but thanks. I sighed. What if we fail and she just dies?
Because we had the audacity to start a quest without a true hero. Or worse, what if by completing dungeons, we've deprived the next hero of the resources he needs to succeed?
Well, the dungeons refill themselves between heroes. I don't know how, but it always happens. I imagine that within the next 70-odd years, they'll repopulate.
He shook his head.
I began this journey with you knowing those risks. There may be consequences. Nay, there will be consequences. We may die. We may get others killed. But we must think, too, of the consequences of doing nothing. You are the one who once told me that you would not wait and watch while the world burned around you. Is that not still true?
I winced. It is. Maybe. I don't know. I felt so certain when this all started, but seeing someone else get hurt because of me, it's not as easy as I expected.
Ken put a hand on my knee.
If watching others suffer was easy for you, you never would have taken this task in the first place. You have empathy. Never lose that. It's the most important part of being a hero.
He raised a finger.
Well, that and the outfit. Which reminds me.
I raised an eyebrow.
You've been entirely underdressed for too long. Come here.
Ken gestured to me, stood up from his chair, and walked over to his bed. Then he opened his backpack.
I went out early and purchased the last few things. And, with a bit of a fashionista's touch, it's finally ready.
He reached into the bag and withdrew the finished product, laying it down on the table near our beds. A simple green tunic accompanied by a green archer's cap, the traditional garb of a hero. I admit that my eyes teared up just a little. I don't think I can take this. I'm not a real hero. He snorted at me.
Do you think you need a class to wear a fancy outfit?
I mean, maybe. I know armor requires proficiencies. I've only got light and medium.
Ken rolled his eyes.
This isn't heroic armor, dear. This is a hero's tunic and hero's hat. And while they will protect you, I assure you that they have no proficiency requirements whatsoever. And they'll fit you perfectly, both physically and in terms of your heroic demeanor.
I don't know. I still have doubts.
Ken walked over and sat down in front of me.
Aside from empathy and a perfect outfit, having doubts is the next most important part of being a hero. Anyone who doesn't take the time to evaluate the consequences of their actions for others from time to time is taking the Demon King's path, not the hero's. Now, try this on. I went to a lot of work to make this, and I'll be quite put out if you don't like it.
Ken was a little pushy, but he was right. Although I tried not to think about how he'd gotten my measurements. I was just hoping it was a fashionista skill. The outfit fit perfectly over my existing leather armor. I wasn't going to wear it without my armor. Fashionable or not, a green tunic was no replacement for not dying. And just wearing the tunic and hat, as silly as it was, helped me regain my focus. Maybe I didn't have to be perfect. Maybe there wasn't a perfect approach or a solution that didn't have consequences. But I'd made a choice from the start, to fight, to try to save the world, even if no one else would. I wasn't going to stop until I'd succeeded, or given my very last breath. We spent the next week doing what we did best, hunting an incredible number of slimes. If we'd been a little more traditional, we probably would have moved up to fighting monsters more appropriate for our level. Orcs, maybe, or some mild demons. We'd conquered a dungeon, after all, and even slain a dragon. But me?
I wasn't really much for needless challenges. Efficiency was more important. And that tangle with the dragon had shown me that I was still far from properly prepared for boss monsters. Truthfully, it was a nice way to relax. The slimes no longer offered us any risk, and the metal ones still gave us considerable experience. The princess herself wasn't my chief concern. Thousands of people had died from the Demon King's invasion already, and a princess, no matter how royal, was no more valuable than any other. No. The reason it worried me is that it was a form of escalation. Either the Demon King was aware that a dungeon had been conquered, which I considered eminently plausible, or he had simply chosen to advance the timetable of his conquest independently. Either was worrying, for different reasons. By the end of the week, we'd managed to gain 2 more levels. Between that and the level we'd earned from the dragon, we'd reached a total of level 14. I had unlocked the Dragon Hunter class from killing the dragon. While leveling up was sincerely tempting, it had a lot of overlap with my existing Slime Hunter class, so I didn't pick it for now. Instead, I focused entirely on my Bag Mage class. With 2 more levels in Bag Mage applied, I was up to level 12 in Bag Mage and level 2 in Slime Hunter. I didn't get any new skills out of that, but I did pick up 1 more new dimensional magic spell. Gravity. It apparently would pull objects and people toward me, which seemed pretty useful. After a brief series of tests, I determined that it could pull someone as heavy as Ken, sorry Ken, toward me, but slowly. It moved small objects much more quickly. Ken was up to level 11 in Sword Saint and level 3 in Fashionista. I wasn't really sure what his logic was for that third Fashionista level, but going to level 11 in Sword Saint got him a Holy Slash ability, which sounded pretty good. Apparently, it was more like a special attack than a spell, using mana to cause holy damage on his next swing. To celebrate our new levels, we went back to town and bought some upgraded equipment. I finally bought myself a longsword, since I'd noted how important reach could be. I kept my short sword too, since my ambidexterity skill would allow me to use weapons in both hands if I wanted to. I bought a large shield as well and stuck it in my inventory, just in case I ran into an opponent I wanted to fight against more defensively. Ken splurged on buying a sword made of mage silver, a legendary substance that was harder and lighter than steel. Apparently, it was pretty good for conducting magic through, too, which would be useful for his Holy Slash skill, and any similar skills he picked up later. I encouraged him to buy some armor, but he told me it clashed with his aesthetic. Instead, he spent the rest of his money on buying a handful of powerful healing potions.
"I can heal with my magic, but this lets me save mana," Ken explained. "And they're also useful against certain types of monsters. Healing magic burns the undead and some types of demons. With a powerful enough healing item or spell, you even destroy certain types of undead outright."
That gave me an idea. I'd been focusing so much on traditional weapons and armor that I'd been neglecting to think of other items. Potions were useful, but there were other options for equipment that would come in handy. With my remaining money, I purchased the most powerful magical item I could afford, a lightning rod. It was capable of calling down a blast of lightning utilizing the user's own mana. With it, it would be almost as if I could use offensive magic on my own. That would be fantastic for opponents that were too tough for my bow to damage, or those rare monsters that were immune to physical damage entirely. Unfortunately, with that purchase, I was completely broke. With some new levels and better gear, we got back to strategizing. I began with a modest proposal. So, I was thinking, if we killed about 1,000 more silver slimes...
"Please, Yui, no. Have some mercy. Every time I go through that disgusting forest, I have to replace my entire outfit. If we spend 1 more day in that horrible place, I think I'm going to have to replace my skin."
Ken gave a shudder. I thought he was being a little melodramatic, but he had a point. That place was pretty icky.
Okay, but we very nearly died fighting the boss of the first dungeon. And I don't feel like even a couple levels and equipment upgrades are going to be enough to make us safe. Maybe we could go hunt something more dangerous? I heard about a place with giant silver slimes.
No more slimes, Yui. I don't care what size they are, how shiny they are, or anything else. No more slimes.
I gave a sigh of resignation. Okay. But ordinary monsters are going to be a lot harder.
To fight? Maybe. Harder on my complexion and wardrobe budget? Certainly not.
Ken folded his arms. I took a moment to ponder that. I hadn't really been looking for places to hunt that didn't involve exploiting my slime hunting abilities for easy experience and loot. Fine, fine. You're always rambling about what the hero would need. What would the hero have to help keep him safe that we're currently lacking?
Well, that depends in part on the specific hero, Ken replied. Many of the heroes had legendary magic items that assisted them in their quests. Gauntlets that allowed the lifting of heavy rocks, thinned shoes for swimming faster, a magic harmonica for playing songs to unlock certain hidden locations.
How are thinned shoes a magical item? Isn't that just like swimwear?
They're magic swimwear, Yui. Try to keep up.
I sighed. Okay, fine. Magic swimwear. What else? Ken clasped his hands together, his expression brightening.
Ah, I know what we're missing. I can't believe I didn't think of it sooner. There's something every hero needs in case of emergencies.
I racked my brain to think of what Ken was talking about. There were some items that many heroes used. Swords, bows, green tunics. We'd covered most of that. There were a few that were defining features of specific heroes, like the timey-wimey hero using a harmonica, or the wolf hero somehow learning to shapeshift. But I couldn't think of a lot of other elements that all the heroes had in common, except... Please don't tell me this is going to be about explosives again. Ken snorted.
Certainly not. No, we should get some bombs, but this is far more important. We, nay, you, need a fairy.
I stared at him. No. You're joking.
Yes.
He brightened.
It's so clear to me now. Every successful hero has one. Or more. Some of them practically had hordes of fairies.
Now I folded my arms. There's one pretty serious problem there. Fairies are notoriously capricious. They're terribly difficult for anyone to deal with aside from the hero. And heroes don't always get along with them.
But we do have a hero, don't we? Look at how heroic you are. So green, so pristine.
I sighed. Please, Ken. Fairies live thousands of years. They're not going to be fooled into thinking I'm a hero just because of an outfit. I was confident about that. At least up until the point when we actually found a fairy several days later. I prepared to explain why we'd come to find her, but...
Hero! You've come at last!
The winged maiden exclaimed, floating above the center of a tranquil, oddly rectangular-shaped pool of water. She was much larger than what I'd pictured of ordinary fairies, human height, with broad, butterfly-like wings, and wearing a long dress made of leaves. Her hair was bright green, but aside from that in the wings, she looked mostly human.
And my, aren't you a dashing one?
She gave me a wink. Ken gave me an encouraging nudge, grinning brightly. I took a deep breath, questioned my life choices for the 100th time, and knelt in front of the pond. I had to stop myself from saying thank you and chose my words carefully. You are quite lovely yourself. Saying thank you could have implied that I owed the fairy something. I wasn't an expert on dealing with fairies and their many rules and customs, but I'd learned bits and pieces during my studies of ancient heroes, especially the fairy harem hero and the water temple hero, and I intended to avoid making any obvious mistakes if possible.
From your obvious majesty,
I can only presume that you are one of the great fairies. Is that correct?
By obvious majesty, I was actually just referring to her size. Ordinary fairies were barely larger than a palm. Only the great fairies were human-sized, as far as I knew. She brightened.
Such flattery! I am, indeed, one of the great fairies. You may refer to me as Leafy Green. You're very kind. Can I keep you?
I'm afraid I have duties to attend to, and thus I cannot accept your generous offer. If you would be interested, however, I am currently on a journey to fight the Demon King, and I would be interested in your companionship.
Leafy Green gasped.
How exciting! I would absolutely love to see such a thing. But with matters being such as they are, I can't possibly leave this place for such a long quest. Too much to do, you see.
She gestured toward the still pond. As far as I could tell, there was nothing in it. No fish, no other fairies swimming, not even algae. I had no idea if she was simply deflecting, or if there was some actual mysterious fairy business she had to attend to down here. I nodded slowly.
Well, if that's the case, how about assisting us with upgrading our equipment?
It was a long shot, but I'd heard that a couple of heroes had gotten better weapons and shields simply by throwing their old ones in fairy ponds and waiting for a great fairy to throw out better ones in exchange. I had no idea why anything worked that way, but I wasn't going to pass up an opportunity for better gear if I could do it. She tilted her head to the side, seemingly pondering.
I suppose if you want some fairy equipment, I could help with that. If you'd be willing to do me a favor in exchange. A favor that would work to both of our advantages.
I frowned. I didn't like where this was going.
What sort of favor?
Well, you're looking for a fairy, and I happen to know one that might be willing to go with you. She can be rather difficult, however, and I would require you to persuade her to go with you, and to agree to take her through at least one dungeon, regardless of her actions. She needs it, the poor thing.
Ken slapped me on the shoulder.
This sounds like an excellent plan. It's everything we wanted.
I glared at him a little. Leafy Green ignored him entirely.
Well, would you like to accept my deal?
I took a deep breath, and with a feeling of great foreboding, I replied, I'll accept your deal.
Wonderful!
Leafy Green flapped over to me, leaned over, and kissed me on the forehead. I felt something like a mild sting.
There we are, all sealed. Now follow me, and I'll introduce you to Vex.
Vex? Given that fairy names tended to be descriptive of their nature, I did not like the sound of that in the slightest. Leafy Green led us across the windswept plains, through the missing forest, and all the way up a winding mountain path that didn't have any fancy name that I was aware of. About halfway up the mountain, we found a river that flowed along the mountainside. We followed it for miles until Leafy Green stopped in front of a waterfall.
We're here.
Here?
Ken asked. It was a subtle thing, but looking at the waterline, I could see an area that was much shallower than the rest of the river. Shallow enough to walk across if I didn't mind getting my boots a little wet. And on the other side of the river, there was a narrow path. Right up to the waterfall. Leafy Green looked at us expectantly. With growing concern, I stepped across the narrow, partly submerged river path. My boots are going to be making that annoying squelching sound for days. Then, I carefully navigated the thin path on the opposite side until I reached the waterfall. I looked at it, dubiously. Leafy Green just smiled at me. I stared at it, then after a moment, I tentatively stuck my hand through the waterfall and found a dry section on the other side. Leafy Green smiled even brighter, flapping closer. I stuck my head through the waterfall. On the opposite side, I found the entry to a rough-hewn cavern. In spite of the natural appearance of the cave, there were a pair of torches glowing on the walls.
I thought I heard a subtle musical tone as I glanced inside. I mentally kicked myself for not expecting it. Of course, there was going to be a secret passage behind a waterfall. There were always secret passages behind waterfalls. I pushed through the waterfall and into the cavern beyond. The water soaked me on the way through, which wasn't ideal, but I warmed myself at one of the magical torches.
Marvelous. Simply marvelous. A hidden fairy retreat.
Ken clapped his hands, tiny droplets of water flying from them on impact.
Shall we proceed?
He gestured toward the rest of the cave. Leafy Green flew in behind us. Somehow, in spite of passing straight through the waterfall, not a single droplet of water hung off of her.
I'll go up ahead and knock. Vex is, liable to be somewhat cranky at first. She's probably sleeping, and it takes her a while to wake up properly.
How long is a while? I asked.
Oh, just a year or two.
Leafy Green waved a hand dismissively.
It depends on how long she's been asleep, but I made her get up and stretch a few decades ago, so it shouldn't be too bad.
I groaned, already regretting my agreement. Let's go. We followed Leafy Green down the cavern. Fortunately, there were no monsters or traps, just a surprisingly long cavern that led to a large wooden door with intricate glowing runes on it. I expected those runes meant that Leafy Green would have to do something magic-y to open the door. Instead, she just pounded on it loudly.
Wake up! Wake up!
Came a smaller voice from the other side. What is wrong with you? I was sleeping! Leafy Green scoffed.
Yeah, that's all you do. Come on out. You've got visitors.
Don't wanna. Leave me alone. I'm going back to bed.
A tiny, adorable-sounding yawn came from the other side of the door. It was a stark contrast to the irritated tone of her voice. Leafy Green folded her arms.
You come out here right now, young lady. There are human guests waiting for you.
The other voice, presumably Vex, sounded positively vitriolic when she responded.
Ugh, that's even worse. Why would you bring humans here? They're the actual worst. Just go away already.
Don't make me come in there, young lady.
Like you even could. I warded the door.
Leafy Green leaned toward the door.
You will come out here this instant.
Stop bossing me around. You're not my mom.
You're an anthropomorphized concept, young lady. You don't have a mother. You take that back.
This sort of back and forth went on for some time, before Leafy Green turned back toward us, giving a hopeless shrug.
Forgive Vex's impetuousness. She's still a teenager.
I blinked. Didn't you say she'd been sleeping for decades? Leafy Green nodded.
Oh, yes. By teenager, I mean she's just over 1,800 years old. Practically still a child, and she still acts like one.
That made a surprising amount of sense. And you want me to try to talk to her?
That would be part of the agreement, yes.
Leafy Green gestured toward the door. I walked up to it, uncertain on how to even begin to try to coax a hostile teenaged fairy out of her room. Honestly, I wasn't even sure success at that would be a good thing in the long run. Still, I hadn't gotten this far just to give up. If I could actually get a fairy to help, she'd be an invaluable resource. If she wasn't so insufferable that she cut our life expectancy more than she added to it. Hello? Vex? I'd like to talk to you, if you're willing. A moment of silence.
What do you want, human?
I'm going on a dangerous journey, you see, and I could use the help of a... I hesitated a moment. Talented fairy, such as yourself.
Uh-huh. Sure. And where is this dangerous journey leading?
I glanced from side to side. Leafy Green gave me a two-handed gesture that I assume was supposed to be encouraging. I turned back to the door.
To the Demon King. I'm going to fight him.
The Demon King.
Vex's tone was matter-of-fact.
Yes, you see, I...
The door swung wide open. It was a human-sized door, so I'm still not quite sure how this 6-inch-tall fairy on the other side managed to get it open. Either way, Vex was a hand-sized bundle of pissed. She had her fists raised, her jaw tight, and spheres of black energy rotated in the air around her. The only thing darker than the magic surrounding her was the black of her eyeliner.
How dare you?
Vex said, pulling back a diminutive arm. In the background, I noticed Leafy Green subtly slinking away. I lifted my hands up in a warding gesture.
I didn't mean to offend. I just thought... You thought? What? That it would be funny to get my hopes up? To pretend to want me? Only to turn me aside like used garbage, just like he did?
I briefly pondered asking why she'd said used garbage, and what unused garbage might have entailed, but thankfully I thought better of it. I sincerely have no idea what you're talking about.
Wait.
Ken made a contemplative expression.
This is all jogging my memories a bit. Oh, you're the fairy who failed, aren't you?
Vex turned toward him, and for a moment, I worried that her stare alone would strike him dead on the spot.
Right. That was rude of me. Could we, perhaps, forget I said anything? I'm just going to,
Ken stepped behind me, apparently trying to hide. This was not very effective, since Ken was taller and wider than I was. Vex visibly trembled with rage.
You! You're even wearing some kind of sick mockery of his outfit, aren't you?
Honestly, I'd been feeling pretty good about my green tunic up to that point.
Hey now, Ken worked really hard on this outfit. There's no need to be rude about it.
Vex narrowed her eyes at me, then hissed.
You come to my home, wearing that, and ask me to come with you to fight the Demon King? Did she put you up to this?
We turned toward Leafy Green. She'd stopped subtly slinking and had started sprinting back down the tunnel away from us. I thought I heard her cackle along the way. Sort of. Vex turned toward the fleeing figure, her wings fluttering. I stepped in the way before she could pursue, then raised my hands in a defensive gesture.
I think we started off wrong here. I'm Yui. I'm not teasing you. I am, in fact, actually going after the Demon King. And I didn't know about your particular background before coming here.
It's her fault, then. She's always trying to get me to come out, luring me with false hope and broken promises. Just like his. There's nothing left out there for me. I can't.
She dropped her hands, and I could sense her mood lower along with them.
Not again.
I'd heard about the fairy who failed, of course. I'd just never known she still existed. She was a part of one of my favorite stories as a child. You see, I always loved tragedies. The fairy who failed was the loyal companion to the Water Temple hero, who was, if you recall, one of only two heroes in recorded history who failed to defeat the Demon King, and the only one who didn't even reach him. He disappeared in the Water Temple, his fate unknown. But worse than that, his fairy survived. She'd fled the Water Temple. Such was a fate worse than death for a fairy bound to a hero. She was sworn to sacrifice her life for her hero if necessary. That was the pact struck between fairies and heroes long ago. In surviving, she'd earned herself a moniker and a legend almost as infamous as the Water Temple hero himself. And like the ancient heroes, though her true name had long faded into obscurity, her title and story remained. I was quickly realizing that Leafy Green had far more than just sending a fairy along with us in mind. This was an intervention, not a trick or a prank. It was a chance for a fallen fairy to earn redemption. and I wasn't sure I could give it to her. So, understanding that, I had to be honest with her. "Vex, listen to me. I understand if you don't want to go with me. I don't know what happened to you the last time you went after the Demon King." Her eyes burned as she turned her head up toward me. "But I know that this time is going to be different, one way or another. For one thing, I'm not even a real hero, not in the traditional sense." Ken frowned at me.
"Yui, wait, maybe you shouldn't."
"No, I'm not keeping a secret about something like this from someone we want to work with. Vex, I don't know if you're keeping track, but we're still many years away from a traditional hero rising. I don't have the hero class, but I've already cleared a dungeon, and I intend to clear the rest." Vex turned her head to the side. "Why? That's not your job. That's what the hero does." "Because if everyone in this world waits for another hero to save them, I don't know if this world will survive. And if I'm content to wait and let another person risk their life for me, I don't know if I'm worth saving." Vex floated closer, looking conflicted. "Can you do it?" "I don't know. But if heroes can fail," she winced when I said those words, "then maybe, just maybe, people who aren't heroes can succeed. Maybe rather than leaning on prophecies and cycles, we should try to do things ourselves."
"You sound just like him."
Vex's voice was barely a whisper. "What do you mean?" I hadn't expected that response.
"He was so optimistic. He wanted to make a change, break the cycle. He planned something ambitious, but in the end..."
She shook her head sadly. "Do you blame him for trying to do something different?" It was a painful question to ask, but important.
"No," she replied softly. "He was right all along. And until now, I thought he was the only one."
As she fluttered closer, I realized there were tiny teardrops dripping from her eyes. "Vex, I don't know if I can be like that hero, or any hero at all. But if I'm to have any chance of success, I'm going to need a fairy's help, and I'd like it to be you. Will you come with me?" She let out a ragged breath, half sobbing, and then floated closer to kiss me on the forehead. This time, I didn't feel a sting, but rather like ice cold had been pressed against me.
"I will."
She paused.
"But I'm still really tired. You don't happen to have a glass bottle by any chance, do you?"
"A glass bottle? Why?" Ken shrugged at me.
"Traditional traveling fairy habitat. She can sleep inside."
I stared at Ken, then at Vex. "Wouldn't you suffocate?
You have to make holes for air, obviously, and make sure the cork on the top isn't too secure. I need to be able to get out right when you're almost about to die."
After further discussion, it became clear that Vex was deadly serious about the whole bottle thing. We went back to town and got a bottle. I made sure there were ample air holes and an easily removable top. And with that, I had earned myself a fairy companion. Don't think I let Leafy Green get away without delivering on her side of the bargain, by the way. Right after securing Vex, we traveled back to Leafy Green's pond. She didn't show herself immediately, but she surfaced from the water, still appearing to be completely dry, as soon as I tossed a sword in.
"You want me to bless this piece of junk?" she asked.
"I mean, if you want to replace it with something better." I nudged.
"No, it's fine. I'll bless what you have. A deal is a deal. Toss in anything you want to have blessed."
"Anything?" About 10 minutes later, Leafy Green collapsed on the side of the pool.
"Please, mercy!"
A gigantic sack of recently blessed equipment was sitting next to her. It would seem that in her haste to get us to take Vex, Leafy Green may have neglected to put a limit on the number of items she would bless for us. And, Given how that scenario had played out, it was something I fully intended to take advantage of. I didn't strictly need fairy-upgraded undergarments, nor did I know if they actually provided me with any additional defense or utility. But I wasn't going to turn down any potential edge I could get, especially after she called my sword junk. After Ken and I finished having her bless a simply ludicrous supply of items, we finally bid her goodbye. For the moment. I fully intended to come back to get her to bless more junk later. She hadn't specified a time or a quantity limit. In the meantime, however, I had other priorities. It was time to deliver on the second part of the deal, taking Vex through a dungeon. Step 8. Okay, now clear the remaining dungeons in the proper order. There was a traditional sequence for clearing dungeons. Not every hero followed it, but some dungeons were much easier than others, or provided equipment that would be useful in the next dungeon. The gods had clearly stacked things in the hero's favor, at least in some respects. But we'd run into a small problem that got me to questioning whether going to the traditional second dungeon next was the wisest course of action. There was a high chance that the Demon King already knew I'd cleared one of the dungeons. I couldn't guarantee it. Maybe Princess Fitzgerald's disappearance was unrelated to the Demon King, and/or unrelated to my dungeon clearing. I wasn't egocentric enough to think that literally everything happening was because of me. But if I presumed that there was a chance the Demon King knew what I'd done, I had to make adjustments. I didn't know if he'd be concerned about non-heroes, but I could at least be cautious. So, rather than going to the next and most convenient dungeon immediately, I chose to make a somewhat less predictable move. Ken and I headed straight for the Water Temple, the most notorious and dangerous of all dungeons, and had a legendary reputation for wickedness. It was where the strongest hero of all had disappeared, never to return. On the way to the Water Temple, we encountered a strange figure on the road. They were sitting on a rocky outcropping just off the path, playing soft music on some kind of a musical instrument. At first, I didn't recognize that it was a harmonica, like the ones that several legendary heroes were known to play. The figure was covered head to toe in black robes, with some stylized golden threading across the shoulders. They wore a scarf, as well as a cloth mask that covered the lower half of their face, and an eye patch over their right eye. Two knives sat on their hips, each with a distinctive gold-winged pommel. I couldn't tell if they were male or female. They were skinny, with an athletic build, and very few of their features were visible. Ken and I warily approached. The figure finished playing the last notes of their melody, one that seemed somewhat familiar, and turned to look down at us.
"Greetings, hero."
The figure hopped down from the rock, landing dramatically in the center of the road. Their voice, much like their appearance, was androgynous. As they landed, they tossed their scarf backward with a flourish. It would have been quite impressive if they hadn't hit themselves in the face with it and stumbled a few steps after the landing. That didn't stop them from continuing to talk as if nothing had happened, though.
"So, hero, you finally made it here. The Water Temple."
I blinked. "I'm sorry. Not actually the—" Ken covered my mouth.
"Yes, we're here. Sorry for taking so long. How may we help you?"
The masked figure raised a single eyebrow, then replied,
"The Water Temple is sealed, as it has been since the coming of the last hero. I am here to assist you with opening it."
"That is so very nice of you. Thank you. I'm Ken, by the way, and this is the hero, Yui."
Ken flashed the masked figure a smile. I pushed Ken's hand away from my mouth with a groan. "Yes, nice to meet you. I liked your song." I think the figure blushed slightly at my remark.
It was nothing. I mean, it was. I was playing it for you, because, you know, you need to know it."
Ken nodded seriously, as if he knew what the masked figure was talking about.
It is a sacred song, then.
I'd heard of those. Legendary songs passed down to the hero from the royal family or the great sages, each with magical power.
Indeed, Ken.
The masked figure gave him a nod.
You are wise, and worthy to be a companion of the hero.
Ken preened a little bit.
Ah, of course.
I resisted the urge to roll my eyes. Thank you. That's very kind of you. I don't suppose you could tell us who you are, or how you knew we were going to be here? Are you one of the descendants of the sages, perhaps? The figure crossed their arms.
I am nothing. No one.
Simply a wandering ninja, and definitely not a princess of the royal family. I raised an eyebrow. That's, weirdly specific, but sure. Okay. Do you have a name? Or am I just supposed to call you definitely not a princess? The supposed ninja narrowed their single visible eye.
If you must give me a name, you may refer to me as Nameless Kage.
You want your name to be Nameless? That's, sort of a conch. Ken covered my mouth again.
We are honored to meet you, esteemed Nameless Kage. Alas, we were down the road when you began the song, and were not able to hear the entirety of it. Would you be kind enough to play it again?
Of course. Such is my duty as a ninja. Music playing ninja. Yes. Nameless raised the flute to their lips and began to play. I took a moment to relax, listen, and bask in the music. Ken clapped when they finished.
Excellent. Wonderful.
He turned to me.
Did you memorize that?
We've been over this, Ken. I don't play the flute, the harmonica, or any other sort of wind instrument.
Impossible.
Nameless stepped forward.
You cannot progress your quest without playing the harmonica.
Ken gave me a look.
Told you we should have got you one, Yui.
Hey, look, I can't do everything.
It is your job, hero, to do everything,
Nameless explained.
It is your great strength and your burden. I do not envy you. Fear not, however. If you do not yet have the skill to play the harmonica, you still have many years before the Demon King conquers these lands. You may only have to bear the deaths of tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people on your conscience as you flounder throughout your quest without the necessary skills to succeed.
Wow, gosh. If you put it like that, maybe I should have taken up the harmonica. Yeah. Thanks for that reassurance, Nameless. I sighed. Couldn't you, you know, just go with us and play the relevant songs for us? The ninja let out a gasp, raising a hand to their chest.
Why, of course not. That would be unheard of.
A ninja would never make a viable companion to the hero.
I am simply not suited for such a thing. I must teach you the song, then vanish into obscurity until such a time as I am needed to make a dramatic entrance. Our esteemed nameless friend is right, Yui.
Ken nodded.
The precedent is clear here.
I gave an exasperated sigh. Couldn't you learn to play the harmonica, Ken, since you're so keen on the idea?
Absolutely not. What happens when we're separated in the final dungeon by the four demon generals, and you're forced to go on and confront the Demon King alone?
I was thinking we'd, maybe avoid that? There were gasps from both of the others. I sighed. Never mind. Look, nameless ninja.
Kage,
they corrected. Right. Nameless Kage, which is definitely not a name, who is also a ninja and most certainly not a princess. They nodded at my correction. Anyway, given that I don't have a harmonica or any idea how to use one, perhaps you could take some time to teach it to me and then loan me your harmonica? They hesitated.
I don't know.
This is something of an heirloom of the royal family.
She didn't even seem to notice the implication there.
Okay, fine. I'm going back to town and buying a dirt cheap harmonica. Then you can give me some lessons, and I'll go murder some silver slimes and take a level in performer or minstrel or something to make sure I don't mess it up.
Nameless Kage looked wary.
Your levels in the hero class should be sufficient to give you all the skills you need.
I don't actually...
Ken covered my mouth again.
Our hero is indeed a strange one. She's, new at this, but an excellent hero, I assure you.
She.
Nameless squinted her one visible eye at me.
Wait a moment. Is that right?
I just assumed you were a young lad, what with your short hair and athletic build. Shouldn't the hero be...
Ha-ha!
Ken slapped me on the back.
There's nothing to worry about, friend Nameless. Surely, you can see that Yui is wearing a green tunic.
Nameless squinted again, then nodded.
Yes.
And the hero is known to wear a green tunic, yes?
Nameless nodded.
Indeed, it is so. The legends passed down in my family are quite clear on this point.
And look,
Ken pointed at me.
A green hat, as well.
And see this? A sword. And a bow. Truly, a finer hero could not be hoped for. I glared at Ken. He grinned brightly.
Nameless tilted their head to the side, then drew in a breath and bowed at the waist.
Forgive me, hero. I was a fool to have ever doubted you. Your loyal companion has convinced me of the error in my judgment.
It's, fine. Thanks, Nameless
Kage.
Nameless stood back up and nodded.
Given that you have not been taught the ways of the harmonica yet, and will need some time to purchase one...
Won't be long at all, actually. Town gate!
A glimmering portal appeared behind me. Nameless stared.
Are heroes supposed to be able to do that?
Ah, ha, ha.
Ken stepped forward.
Truly, our hero is a cut above the rest, yes? So fresh and versatile.
Nameless hesitated, then nodded gravely.
Indeed, it is so.
So I'll just go get that harmonica, and then we can start the lessons, I guess?
Nameless nodded.
I see. Yes, this is well. You may not see me when you return, however. Call out if I appear to be missing, for I will be one with the shadows.
With that, Nameless pulled out something from a pouch and hurled it to the ground. A blast of smoke shot up as the vial cracked, concealing Nameless. Just for a moment, though, we could very clearly see them attempting to run around a corner after the wind blew the smoke away. When they got around the bend, I thought I heard them trip over something.
Should we check on them, or...
I asked Ken.
Oh!
Ken yelled.
Where did Nameless vanish to? Such amazing ninja skills!
I sighed. Really?
Play along. It's clearly important to them.
I paused for a moment, then yelled. Wow! I have no idea! Truly, they vanished without a trace! Never mind the muddy footprints leading around the corner. It looked like her boots were wet or something. Maybe they'd gotten them drenched in the water outside the temple somehow?
Good.
Ken nodded to me.
Shall we go back to town now?
Let's get this over with. We returned to town via the portal, obtained a harmonica, and then went back and found Nameless easily. I began my harmonica lessons. It was terrible. Nameless was a good and patient teacher, but without any relevant skills, my music was, let's just say, not good and be done with that. Fortunately, practice was all it took to unlock the prerequisites for a class. I spent the next few days taking trips to the water temple to meet with Nameless for lessons, then going back to the forest to hunt more silver slimes. Ken begged and pleaded for us to find somewhere, anywhere, else to hunt. but slimes were simply too convenient. After about a week, and the loss of one more of Ken's entire wardrobe sets, we'd accomplished our goal.
You have gained a level.
I'd finally reached level 15. And with some regret, I spent that level on the Bard class.
You have gained the Perform skill. You have gained the Song Magic skill. You have learned the Song of Slumber.
I wasn't particularly thrilled with any of that, but at least a new type of magic was neat. Once I had the Perform skill, practice increased that skill rapidly. Within a few more days, I'd reached the point where my basic musical skills were passable. It didn't take long after that before I finally reaped the benefits of Nameless's training.
You have learned songs specifically for unlocking the Water Temple.
And perhaps more important, that wasn't the only song Nameless taught me.
You have learned the Song of Weather. You have learned the Song of Spirits. You have learned the Song of Fairy Calling. You have learned the song passed down to members of the royal family.
Maybe this wasn't such a waste of time after all. The Water Temple was a colossal structure of white stone, wrought in an age when magic was more widespread, and people were poor at predicting when certain sites would eventually end up completely underwater. It wasn't always the Water Temple, you see. That's just what happens when you build a big structure on a small scenic island that isn't structurally sound. Eventually it sinks, and you want to make it sound like it was your idea all along. Anyway, the most important part is that the Water Temple was underwater. It was in the center of a small circular lake, maybe a few hundred feet in diameter. There was still a road leading up to what once was the entrance, but it ended at a sheer cliff. I could see the former entrance about 20 feet below. Ken stared out at it.
You know, Yui, I appreciate your, let's call it non-standard approach to solving dungeons. But we can't breathe underwater, and that place is, well, entirely underwater.
That's what the song is for, yeah? I lifted my harmonica. Ken winced as I lifted it to my lips. I felt mildly offended. I wasn't that bad at playing music, was I? It's possible that a few weeks of music practice wasn't exactly enough to make me an inspiring performer. True. But I had natural talent. At least, that's what I like to tell myself, so I can forget the horror on his face every time I tried to play something.
The song will get us through the front door, yes, but
then we'll work from there, I beamed. Ever optimistic about plunging into the depths of things far beyond my level of skill or knowledge. Then I raised the harmonica and played the legendary song specifically for unlocking the Water Temple. As I finished the song, I heard something like a strange string of musical notes in the air, then felt a deep rumble within the ground. The gigantic metal doors of the temple trembled, then opened wide. I'd successfully unsealed the temple. That was just the beginning, though. I watched in fascination as a series of pillars rose from the floor of the lake below, forming steps leading to the entrance of the temple, an entrance which was, unfortunately, still underwater. I can work with that. I hopped to the first pillar, then the second. There were small gaps between them, but they were easy enough for Ken and I to manage.
I really don't think we're ready for this one, Yui. According to legend, we're lacking the proper tools. See those? That ring on the pillar up ahead?
Ken pointed at one of the pillars. I could see the ring he was talking about. It was toward the middle of the pillar and roughly large enough for one hand to grip. Sure. Why?
That's for a grappling hook launcher, one of the legendary hero's tools. We don't have one.
I frowned. Is that really a problem? I have a normal rope and grappling hook in my inventory. Ken shook his head disdainfully.
That's completely different. According to legend, the hero's grappling hook launcher is a device that fires a grappling line like a crossbow.
That just sounds like an ordinary tool, Ken. Is it like magical or something?
I honestly have no idea. but I'm confident that's what the rings are for. No grappling launcher, no rings, no completing the water temple.
I sighed. You're too worried about little things like that. I'm sure we'll work it out. Come on.
Ken frowned, but continued jumping with me. Eventually, we reached a pillar that was just at the waterline. This one was different from the others. It had strange glyphs cut into a runic pattern all over the center of it. They were interesting, but I couldn't read them, so I focused on the problem at hand. I knelt down at the waterline, thinking. In the back of my mind, I was half aware of Ken giving another historical lecture.
Why, this series of patterns was carved in the era of the fairy harem hero. It must be 800 years old. Now, in those times, the hero was known for...
Blah, blah, blah. Ken kept